You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Westwave Audio, LA's new API dealer. And now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, I want to introduce the guys. And over here to my right, I have Rob Arbitier.
Hello there.
Isn't that Martin's chair?
It is Martin.
And then over to my left, Bobby Sommerfeld.
Which is also Martin's chair. He gets around.
Bobby, I feel I haven't seen you in ages.
It's been that long, isn't it?
It's been a while since we've both been on a podcast together.
I was in jail for a while. And
yeah,
stuff like, yeah.
And rehab for the other time. And today we have a really special...
Nice to be back.
It's nice to have you back. Are you going to be here the next one? That's the big question. And today we have a very special guest. We have Greg Undo. And what's your official title?
I'm the marketing manager for Steinberg Products, but I basically serve as kind of a senior product specialist with Steinberg, which is owned by Yamaha.
I think I've seen you before at like the NAMM show and at various trade shows.
Yeah, I've done a lot of trade shows over here. Yeah. I'm usually a guy kind of chained to the booth doing demos like for 55 minutes and then my luxurious 5-minute break and then start again.
Well, that's great. Yeah, Greg's going to be talking about a lot of the great new Steinberg products that are coming out, and we're going to be talking on the second half of all things Steinberg. But before we get going, I just want to there's two things I want to bring up. The first thing is I just picked up, and I know this is a podcast and people can't see it, mm-hmm. but
– It's smoking.
I just picked up the M-Audio MicroTrack recorder. Have you guys seen this before?
No.
It's about the size of an iPod, and it's a 24-bit 96K recorder that is phenomenal. I mean, it truly is phenomenal.
Wow. And what does it record on?
Compact Flash.
Nice.
It records on Compact Flash, and it basically, as much memory as you can put in there is, you know, how long you have. I have a 1 gigabyte card, and at 2496, it gives me about 30 minutes of 96K recording. And I don't know if you guys ever worked with 96K recording. Do you mm-hmm. work?
Yeah, every now and then.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I'm strictly, you know, I do a lot of 48, 24, especially for post, 16, 24. When I went to 2496, it was just, I mean, it's so transparent. Mm-hmm. I was over at Bobby's place and we were playing some drums and just on the little built-in microphone. It was
smoking.
It was really smoking.
Really good. Really good.
Yeah, and it's the cool thing too is you can hook it up to your PC, and you can use it as a disk drive, and it's really easy to get files on and off, and it charges through the USB. So I stick it on my iPod charger on the way into work. It's charged up when I get there, and I use it all day, and and take it back. It's a great little device.
Wow, that's cool.
And it even comes with like a little stereo mic.
Yeah, it has a little stereo mic.
It's a good little mic.
Yeah, it's great. I just thinking, man, technology is just going at a pace that it just makes you wonder, where is it going to be when this little iPod shaped device is old hat, you know? Is it going to be small? Is it going to be a book of matches? Hey, look, I can do 24 tracks on this little thing.
Oh, it's not at all.
You know? So it's stereo, right?
Totally stereo. You can actually...
Is it WAV files? Or what's it create?
WAV files.
WAV files.
I believe it's WAV files.
Yeah, it is WAV files. We put it in the PC and I'd look at it.
That's right. It is WAV files.
On the Mac, rather.
And I'm actually using it in this rack that I'm putting together for AES, where that's going to be my mastering deck. Because I'm going to go SPDIF out of the A to D from API. I'm going to go straight into that.
So that has digital in?
Yes, it has SPDIF in.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty remarkable.
It's got USB as well. I wonder what you can – I suppose you can just use that for downloading to it or uploading.
Well, that's how you charge it, the USB.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
How you charge it?
That's how you charge it. You charge it with the USB as well as transfer data in and out. Besides the, you don't have to take the card out. You can just pull the files right off of it.
And that's SPDIF out only. So.
SPDIF in.
SPDIF in.
Yes.
So for output, it's just analog for monitoring?
For output, it's just analog.
But you can just take the files.
You can just take the
that's
files.
That's really cool.
Very cool.
And it's a very interesting category that's come out recently.
Well, you know what? I actually I'm starting to do sound design and mix on a independent film. And there are some sounds that we have to actually go out and do some recording shoots. which may be why Scott Gershon isn't here tonight, because he knows I'd probably hit him up for some help. Because he has the recording rig from hell.
Yes.
But the idea of just going out with a good set of stereo mics and recording into a device like this, that'd be amazing.
Well, the amazing thing, too, is when I was trying to decide if I was going to pick it up or not, because I was looking for some type of digital recorder to actually do my mastering on, I was just thinking,
when you say mastering, what do you mean mastering?
Well, basically, I want to, instead of bouncing back in, usually what I do is if I go through like an A to D, because I use a lot of summing on analog, mm-hmm. and then I go from an analog to digital converter,
yeah.
then I bounce it back in, like if I'm working on Pro Tools, bounce it back in. Well, now I can just record it back down to this little micro track and have it already in WAV files. I can take it with me and I can listen to it in the car. It's just really convenient. I mean, I think, you know, and it's going to be, you know, the same quality as your PC, but then you don't have to burn it on a DVD or mm-hmm. convert it to an MP3. It's just take
or
it with you.
Or worry about like a portable DAT transport, which, I mean, that's what we've done a lot of live recording with. I know a lot of the film guys are recording on the compact flash now.
Right.
In the old days, having to worry about an actual tape transport in the
safe,
field.
No problems. Never yeah. worried about that.
Yeah, and especially with the DAT tape itself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I dropped a tape once and, oop. Yeah. It's nice to know those days are gone.
Well, I have that little the little DAT man, the little small little.
Yeah, Sony I have that one. Thing too.
Yeah, and you were just like, oh please, don't hit the tape.
Please let this work.
And it would play on the Sony, but not on anything else. Put it in the Panasonic, it would go like, see ya.
Yeah.
Do you remember the 701? Remember the Sony 701ES, the PCM system first came out on VHS tape?
Oh, sure.
Beta tape, right?
Beta tape.
Beta tape.
I still have one.
They sound great. Actually, they sound very good. Sound very very good. Big old, I remember that was such a trip.
I think Pagey still has one. Martin still
Does
has
he?
One. Yeah, in his rack. Anyhow, I just wanted to bring that in to show you guys because
well, that is very cool.
I was just like, it's just, you know, like you get a new toy, you want to share it with
people. Yeah, and the cool thing with that is like if you need more storage memory, you just go to Best Buy. Or
exactly.
Any Radio Shack.
Yeah, anybody has it, yeah.
You can get 8 GB complex flash cards for like $139. 8 gigs.
And the half hour you're talking about at $24.96, that was 1 gig?
That was 1 gig. I was just blown away. I found myself walking outside and just recording the ambience of like my neighborhood at night because it was just so clear, you know. And I'm walking around the house and I'm putting it up to my kids' voices
nice.
And stuff like that.
Neighbor's bedroom. It's so nice.
This is the sound of the cat eating.
Yeah, where there's microphones, a lot of the field recorder guys use that are headphones or their headphones that actually are microphones.
Yeah, yeah. Scott was talking about that for a movie he did where he was in the casinos and he had to record casino activity and he was wearing headphones that were actually microphones.
Yeah.
Pretty sneaky. They're
undercover.
Yeah.
It's good. You got to watch out.
That's right. So I bought that and it's going to be my mastering recorder for this little ultra portable rack from hell together. I call it my laptop secret lab because it's basically going to be a laptop with an ARMY interface, mm-hmm. 8200A summing mixer, going to a A to D, API A to D, and mastering down and recording down to the micro track.
Nice.
All in 3 rack spaces.
Not bad.
Running Cubase.
Right.
And Sonar.
Cubase 4.
I don't have Cubase 4.
Well,
and,
you will.
And Live.
No one does yet. A few people do.
But one thing I wanted to bring up, though, here's this for a segue. The AES show is coming up, and I just want to let everybody out there know that I'm going to be in the API booth, of course. So if you want to come by and say hi and talk about some of the guys who are on the podcast, you are more than welcome to.
And we won't be there to defend ourselves. So
he's going to get punched for us.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah, pass this on to Bobby.
That's right. No, I think it'd be really great. So, you know, come on in and say, hey, I just wanted to talk a little bit about trade shows. And I know, Rob, you've done some demos at trade shows. And I know, Greg, I've seen you at the trade show. Bobby, you ever done any demos at trade shows?
Oberheim,
really?
Wow.
ABA. XA, what was that big white box? I can't remember what the hell it was called.
The OBMX? That
OBMX,
one?
Yeah. That's what it was, yeah.
But nice. This is actually going to be the first time that I've been demoing at a trade show.
Really?
Yeah. And all my years of going to trade shows, this will be the first time I'm actually going
to
be
demoing. It's a lot
demoing.
More fun to go to than demo.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at the chicks and not worry about what you're – not worry about if your thing's crashed or not.
No.
Exactly. Which it has.
Oh,
inevitably.
But I want to know if do you guys have any war stories at trade shows?
Well, I can honestly say I've done a zillion trade shows, but for the last – probably 10 years or so, every show I've done has been Steinberg related, and Greg has been there too, working about 8 times as hard as I was, minimum. I mean, I'd be on for an hour or two a day, and he would be on, it just seemed like 24/7. So if he doesn't have war stories, it means he just hasn't been paying attention.
Yeah, we had 1 year our booth kind of didn't get through customs and was in Norway, but half of the booth. So we had kind of half the booth there and half was in Norway. So some of the guys, you know, there's always like one guy is like the trade show guy. And those guys can perform magic with all sorts of great bribery to make things happen and not look like your booth is actually there. and not missing. And we had 1 year our booth was kind of destroyed. Our office was in Northridge before the big quake in 84, yeah. or 94.
I remember that
and, you know, so our whole booth was gone. It was, ironically, we set up three tables with three computers, and it was our best trade show for orders ever.
Was it really?
Yeah.
And all the Steinberg guys wore hard hats in the booth, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think we had a sign that said Northridge, the software epicenter, something like that. So,
wow, you've been with Steinberg for that long.
Yeah, it's about 14 and a half years.
Wow. Zach used to be up there then, those days, right?
Yeah.
So you were back when Steinberg...
It was on Atari.
Yes.
Yeah. When that was like the cool thing, yeah.
1040 ST.
I remember that. I remember because I worked with Teddy Riley and he used Atari Stacy's running
Hybrid Art Symptotronic.
No, I think it was Cubase back then. Was it either Cubase or it was Logic? Maybe Logic was on the Atari.
Creator.
Notator.
That's right.
There you go.
Well, he's a Nintendo guy now, so we got him switched over.
Is he really?
Yeah, very, very happy. Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. That's really cool.
So you should be.
There have been a lot of stories recently of people who were almost specifically known for dealing with a certain platform that have now switched over to Cubase and Nuendo, and Steinberg should take full advantage of that, which I'm sure they will.
Yeah. Yeah, we were seeing some marketing. And we're seeing some more of the Cubase 4. We're seeing some more kind of – like we had a producers group with Nuendo, and a lot of them are kind of migrating over to Cubase 4 with some other kind of younger, hip guys.
Wow. What about Nuendo breaking into post-production?
It's been doing really well. You know, we have like Electronic Arts, which is kind of a hyper post-production kind of area. You know, in LA and San Francisco to run Nuendo, we have film schools, New Orleans University, Florida State University, which switched entirely over. National Public Radio, you know, there's more dub stages in town switching over, especially with Euphonics implementation with the Yukon. So using that control surface is kind of really ideally suited for, you know, post, you know, a lot of people have seen, I think John Ross was the first guy to have like a big Euphonics. I think there's 88 channels of Euphonics control with Nuendo in his room. And a lot of people have gone there and invested in it. So it's been growing a lot in post market.
That's a good idea to get it into the schools because, you know, that's, I think one of the reasons why Pro Tools did as well as it did is it got into people's hands early and they just.
Yeah, we've had a lot of students after graduating going back to schools and it's like, okay, you know, like they went to Nashville, which is kind of very much a Nuendo centric town. And like, okay, I know Pro Tools, I don't know this and I can't learn and I can't get a job. So we're getting feedback from the students and, you know, like Austin, you know, every studio in Austin is like a big Nuendo town. And, you know, I was there once and the student from one of the, I think it was Berkeley, was calling up trying to get a job and, you know, he didn't know Nuendo and he just wasn't going to get hired.
Wow.
So that kind of filters back to the schools.
Kids, learn Nuendo, get a job in Austin. Okay, so anyhow, we're gonna expand on that a little bit when we talk about Steinberg on the second half. But really quick, getting back to trade shows, all right? I need to know some advice, guys, from all you from.
I'd say comfortable shoes.
Okay, comfortable shoes.
Oh,
yeah, black tennis shoes are the key.
Yeah,
Tennis shoes.
Black tennis shoes because they look kind of dressy but very comfortable.
Well, what about
gum?
Yeah, breath mints.
Yeah, definitely.
Breath mints.
After a night, because normally the trade shows, they stop at about 6 o'clock, and that's when it really starts. You don't really get much sleep. You shouldn't anyway if it's a good trade show.
Yeah.
For a while there, it seemed like when I went to trade shows, all I saw was like the jean shirt. You know, everybody had like black pants and that jean shirt on, you know. So
with the logo on it?
With the logo or just even if they didn't have that logo. Do I wear a jacket? Or do I just go with a nice?
I don't think so.
It's a bunch of music company.
I know, but it's AES though.
It's not Comdex.
What do you mean AES?
No, really, audio industry. So it's fun.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, well,
actually, you know what the hardest part for me at a trade show is? I mean, usually when I would do a demo, my demo was from the perspective of a customer and a user of the product.
Right.
And afterwards, you always say, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. You know, to your audience after you've done a demo. And the hardest part is not getting too wrapped up in any one conversation so that you can actually speak to the most number of people. The whole idea at the trade show is to hit as many people as possible. So if you get sidetracked into a conversation with someone for an hour and a half, you've probably actually hurt a lot of potential business because a lot of people have seen that you're busy or they've just walked by because you didn't seem accessible. So it's a good thing to learn how to keep the conversation short. And if somebody seems like somebody you need to follow up with for business, make a plan to do that separate, you know, by email or separate phone calls. But I have found myself falling into the black hole of conversations a few times where someone will come up after a demo and basically all they want to know is, give me the secret to every aspect of your career for the last 20 years so I can have your job and not right. work hard to get it.
Or they have specific questions, like if you're whatever gear, you're whatever company with, they're like, but dude, there's a bug here. They're like,
they start running down every problem they've ever had with the piece of software.
So, you can't blame them, though, because I know some of the poor people don't get much help, and they're like, you with the Steinberg sign.
Yeah. Well, in those situations, I would usually just send him to Greg. So.
Yeah, he's bigger.
Well, somehow he's willing and able and happy to deal with it.
But I've seen Greg at trade shows before, and he's always at the booth. I mean, he's always.
Yeah, it's always the ironic thing is I always want to go up and see the other things at the trade show, and I never do.
Right.
You know, so there's always like, you know, I will get there like 8 o'clock in the morning, like 2 hours before, and just pick up literature a lot. It's my time to kind of cruise around the show.
And it's important. You have to. You're not just there to evangelize your own stuff. You have to find out what the competition's doing and how they're selling it and.
Do you know like the guys from your competition pretty well? Like, do you know like the Sonar guys or?
I know some of them. I mean, we cross paths and you know.
Do you sneer or is it?
Yeah, we're all very chummy. You know, we're all in the same boat. And it's kind of a unique industry, so and we all kind of face the same challenges. So you know, there's you know the competition is good because it makes the products better.
Yep, definitely.
Now let me ask you: as somebody who's worked as many trade shows as you have. What is your favorite trade show of them all?
I like the AES show. It's you're kind of talking to users. In the NAMM show, you're always kind of supposed to be talking to music dealers, and there's a lot of end users that kind of get in there, and the environment is kind of set up for dealers to place orders, and you know, but. It's always hard to do that, you know, because these days all the dealers kind of come in with their Excel spreadsheets and, oh, you know, we sold three of this week. And, you know, it's not kind of we saw this demo and we're really vibed up about it. Let's do a big order. And it's always, most of the business kind of goes on afterwards. Whereas the AES is always kind of talking to real users.
Right.
So I kind of like that aspect. And I actually saw Cubase myself for the first time at an AES show. So it kind of always has a special place for me.
Wow.
So.
And that was like when in 1970?
1992. I actually skipped to day college. When day of college, I skipped and went up to New York with my buddy. When it was the AES show, was at the Hilton Hotel. It was a little smaller, but everyone had these, you know, you just kind of walk around the hotel in different hotel rooms. You know, there's Lexicon in this room. You go over to this room, there's Emu. And saw Cubase there and got really excited about it.
I was at that AES. I actually got a funny story for that AES. I went there, it was in New York City, right? Yeah. 92. And I went with Jeff Minnick. Who was at Capital. I was working at Capital at that stage, just freelancing. Anyway, long story short, the AES show was nothing funny happened there. But afterwards, we wanted to go out. So I said, I know a club. It's called The World, and it was down the bottom of Manhattan. So we went, but it's a very gay club. And it only opened about 11 o'clock at night. So Jeff's a pretty straight guy. He's a very smart guy and a lovely – he's a mate. But we were standing in line, and there's all these guys in front of me. And the one – nobody could sort of get in because he was, like, making everybody wait outside. And the only way people were getting in, and there were guys, was kissing the man at the, at the thing and just looking at me going, oh, I don't think I'm going to dig this club. It was quite funny. This was,
has to be another place in New York.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure the world is long gone now, but that's pretty funny.
Okay, trade show advice, wear comfortable shoes.
And lip gloss.
Exactly. Kiss the barman.
One thing that's good also is when you talk to people, kind of bring them into the conversation and talk softly because your voice will last a lot longer.
That's true. That having that trade show voice, that feeling in your throat at the end of one or two days means you're not going to make it to three or four days.
So, and kind of drinking Coke helps kind of get that little grit out of the back of your throat.
Okay.
So that's a good little secret.
Yeah. See, we're giving people the behind the scenes of the whole trade show thing because I'm going to go to this trade show and not only work it, but I'm going to just see every demo I possibly can I don't know when, but give a really good report. Anything you want?
Yeah.
Anything?
And usually Sunday, we call it like Manufacturer Appreciation Day because
right.
it's not like a lot of people there. So it's when other manufacturers can kind of take a little break and see other stuff. And you always see kind of a lot of business networking going on as well. That's kind of one of the most fascinating things about the AES show is kind of see, oh, so-and-so met with so-and-so, and you see a project come out like, you know, 18 months later, and it's like, I remember them talking at the AES show, you know.
If you can also, if you're trying to have a meeting with somebody important in any company, try to don't think that you can figure it out later. Try to book the meeting as early as possible because by the last day or two of the show, most of the really important people have either left or scheduled so many meetings that you don't see them on the floor.
Or they're tired.
Well, everybody's tired. Yeah.
And if you need to have like a serious conversation, kind of go outside of the convention center. There's like all sorts of like little San Francisco. You can kind of go kind of upstairs from the Moscone Center. There's like little seats and stuff like that that you can actually go and talk to people. There's one little great little escape secret place at the NAMM show. It's like so quiet and it's like, oh. So you don't realize how loud the shows can be.
Yeah. Well, the NAMM show, man. The NAMM show. The volume level. One of the cool things that I did a couple times, actually, I think it was not this past NAMM show, but the previous one. I didn't go, but I just looked on the websites, and there's a lot of great websites that can really give a play-by-play of the trade show, and you feel like you're actually there.
Yeah, like Harmony Central.
Exactly. Harmony Central is a great site. They're a great site for the – and actually the Summer NAMM. I didn't go to the Summer NAMM, but they have videos up with all the demos, and they pretty much cover everything.
Yeah, I remember Joan and Gary Gand on Gand Sound in Chicago. I remember one time – they're just telling me, it's like, yeah, we didn't go to the NAMM show this year. We just woke up, surfed the web for an hour, saw everything. We got all the NAMM deals afterwards. It was great. We loved it, you know.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, you know, more and more, you're going to see a lot more people doing that.
Can't see the bimbos at NAMM show on the internet. They should. I mean, you know.
Yeah, the hot tubs don't look the same.
Just
the
hot tubs.
Was that this year or last year? No, last year was with the hot tubs.
Yeah.
The hot tubs.
Ago. Well, it's obviously not good marketing because I don't remember what company it was.
No. Well, the ones that listed Gemini.
Either Dean Guitars or Gemini, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One of those
Gemini
two.
Gemini,
or Dean Guitars, you're right. Yeah. One of those two, they always have that.
They're pretty good about those things.
I often wonder that.
So I've heard.
It must be so hard when you go to the NAMM show and you see all this gear, technology. It's kind of interesting because there's obviously new technology coming out. But, like, you see guitars. And for me, I mean, I love guitars, but I look at them thinking – you know, a guitar, like another guitar. I mean, I can't see the point more or less.
No, that's right, because you go
like
down.
For rows of guitars, like strats.
For people
or
don't
you
know.
See, like, guitar straps. It's like, I could get passionate about
exactly.
My guitar straps are better than yours. Yeah.
And the truth is, it's just the NAMM show isn't what we – it isn't for what we wish it was for.
Right.
You know, it's basically so the store owners can go and see what the new stuff is. And
Rob, why don't you give tell people out there who don't know what the NAMM show is, what the NAMM show is so that they know what we're talking about.
The NAMM show is a –
what's the acronym stand for? The National
– National Association of Music Merchants.
Yeah, but now it actually changed to like International Music Merchants or something that doesn't add up to NAMM at all.
Right.
So make it more contemporary.
The MM. What it is I mean, the NAMM show happens a few times a year. There's a Summer NAMM and Winter NAMM, but really the granddaddy of them all is the Winter NAMM, which is traditionally in Anaheim. And that is a massive trade show that takes up the whole convention center. And it's basically where the music dealers go to see the new gear, and every manufacturer has, you know, demos going all the time, and everybody tries to do a flashy booth, and, you know, the booth bimbos walking around is a tradition, and
well, not only
it's
that,
a lot of fun.
But there's also a lot of artists there.
Well, that's the thing.
Demos.
It's not supposed to be at all about individual people or artists or any of that, but everybody who's anybody in the music business ends up going just to see the new toys or to be recognized, or they're just interested. You know, big artists, a lot of them live in L.A.,
right.
And so they come to the show. And actually, for many, many, many years, I've walked Stevie around the NAMM show. He'd usually pick a day and want to check it out. And I will say walking around the show myself is a very different experience than walking around it with Stevie.
Well, that's because Stevie is not just Stevie, but then there's all those people that are like are on the fringe.
The entourage is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it keeps growing.
It does.
As time goes on.
And it's just a sea of people moving around. But that's a pretty unique, cool way to do the NAMM show. But also when somebody like Stevie walks through a show like that, those are his people. I mean, it's a show like that. I can't tell you how many hundreds or thousands of people I've heard come up to him and thank him for inspiring them to have the career they have. You know, yeah, you're the reason I'm in the music world. And so that's a pretty amazing thing. And so when a guy like that is walking through the show, and I'm sure it happened when Ray Charles used to come through. He would come through every year. And a lot of huge artists still come through the show. And it's – I mean, it's got to be a heck of an ego stroke for them. But most of the time – I mean, I know Stevie's primarily there because he just wants to check out whatever the new toys are.
I'll tell you what big thrill I had at the NAMM show one year was
– Working with me. We
actually
– We did.
Yes, I walked the NAMM show with Bobby. That was pretty fun. Yeah, and
people just rushed up to you.
Going, stay away from that guy. No, but I was over, went to the pasty booth and actually saw a demo with Jeff Beccaro playing the drums. And he was like, you know, he was my drumming hero, you know. And I just remember sitting there and I was literally just about 5 feet away from him. Mm-hmm. And he's playing the drums and he just was just jamming. And it was just, you know, this is back where they did demos in the little booths and stuff like that. And it's just, it was just fantastic because he just had such a great groove. And
there are lots of those magical moments that happen at that show. And those are things that wouldn't happen at an AES, even if big stars are walking around an AES, because just the nature of the NAMM show is there are musical instruments
right,
set up.
Right.
So if I would bring Stevie, say, to a, like one time we went to the Korg booth and he sat down just to check out, I think it was the Oasis keyboard, you know, the giant keyboard they have, and he's playing with it and he didn't realize, you know, I'm usually pretty good about telling him what his surroundings are and who's around, and he has security around as well. But where he started playing with the keyboard happened to be next to an open aisle where lots of people could congregate. And he just sat and started playing, you know, Golden Lady and other old songs, and he's just trying out the keyboard, going through sounds.
Right.
He ended up finishing a song and like 300 people had gathered in the aisles around because he was on a corner.
Right.
He stopped, sang the last note, hit the last chord on the keyboard, and the place just erupted in applause. It freaked him out. He didn't realize such a crowd had assembled.
That's true.
And I didn't think to say anything because it all just kind of happened smoothly. But that can happen in a NAMM show because, you know, you could be in a booth trying a keyboard
right. And
right next door – could be a booth selling, you know, drums or some kind of percussion thing, and all of a sudden someone will sit down there and start playing with you. Next thing you know, you have a jam session that's running down the aisle, and there's a lot of magical musical moments at that show.
Right.
It's really interesting people. I remember one time we had Tommy Lee met Stevie Wonder at the Steinberg booth. You know, it's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, and you're just standing there like, what the heck is going on?
Did I just witness this?
You
know. I always remember the Steinberg booth because it's usually where I'm meeting Rob, because before we started the podcast, I'd only see Rob.
It was the only reliable place to find me.
That's right. Was the NAMM show, and we'd always be waiting for somebody to go.
Well, actually, this last NAMM, when we were all standing in the booth when Teddy Riley was there,
exactly.
and we were all – Bobby, you weren't there, but
– No, I wasn't this year. Did I?
But yeah. So that's definitely a time when you saw Greg.
Yeah.
That was surprisingly big. It was like one of those things. I mean, it was maybe like 10 or 15 minutes late, but we had probably like 300-400 people just to kind of see Teddy talk about running Nuendo and switching over. So
it's amazing what a big name will do.
That was funny. Yeah, and that's when – and I didn't know you knew Teddy, and then there was that whole thing.
I just met Teddy. Greg had introduced me.
Oh, really?
To him, yeah.
I thought you knew him.
Mm-mm.
Oh, because I used to keyboard tech for him.
No, I know. And I had known that, but that was after Stevie, right?
No, it was actually before Stevie.
It was before you were with us?
Yeah. That was before.
That was all track of time.
Yeah, I know. But, but it was a great place to hook up, and I saw a lot of the guys that were in Teddy's band at that time and stuff. And it's, you know, it's a great place to hook up.
And we had also some film composers, like Harry Gregson Williams came and, you know, was showing some of the stuff from Chronicles of Narnia that he did in Cubase.
Wow.
And the truth is also that most of the people, even if they're not performing musicians anymore, most of the people who are working at the musical instrument companies or at the gear companies, they're either frustrated musicians or they were professional musicians for a while. You know, everybody is still somewhat attached to the creativity of it. And so, yeah, if you have a successful film composer sitting down there and there's a chance he's going to be telling you some of his secrets, you know, you might be the marketing manager for some, you know, microphone company, but if there's a chance you're going to find out how he voices his, you know, strings, you might sit down for that. And that's what happens at the NAMM show. You have a lot of people who are interested in something that touches them more personally than their actual career does.
Right.
Because everybody there is a musician on some level.
Right.
And it's a real passion, yeah.
Well, the NAMM show,
AES is a little more
nerdy,
sterile, nerdy, techno-geeky.
But it's still, but you know what? But I will tell you, the thing I like about AES, I like the gear that they have there that doesn't show up at the NAMM show. Well,
the more expensive toys that you might not see.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it seems to me you have a little bit more time to kind of just – you know, study whatever piece of gear you want to go to because it's not.
So it's a little more approachable to talk to people, and you don't feel like you're imposing as, you know, just an attendee, you know, like, you know.
No, and actually,
sometimes at NAMM, you can feel like, oh, you know, some booths will put off kind of a vibe of, you know, if you're not a music dealer, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, we're basically here to sell to you. That's all they care about at NAMM. At AES, you really can, you can get into a design discussion with the guy who probably designed the,
that's true,
the piece of gear you're staring at.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, thanks for the advice, and we've pretty much exhausted the whole topic of AES.
Well, but now after AES, we can find out how you actually did.
That's what I'm going to do when I get back. I'll give you guys a full rundown, and you know, basically, I'm going to bring every piece of literature that I picked up, and I'm going to read it live on the podcast.
That should be great.
I'll wait.
We'll see how many you leave in the hotel room.
That's yeah, please, most of them.
Well, all right. You're going to take your little M-Audio recorder. Why don't you take your M-Audio recorder and record
yes, it's going to be
interesting bites.
It's going to be
doesn't that scan?
That's what we're going to do. I'm absolutely going to do that. I'm going to take it. I'm going to record some interesting bites, and we're going to – you know, put that in there and see what happens.
Yeah, record a bunch of examples of you trying to end conversations that are going on too long so you can help sell some gear.
That's right.
That should be entertaining.
No, listen to the quality.
That's right.
Yeah,
what I'll
do, a lot of anyway.
That's right. What I'll do is I'll record, you know, this is my first demo. And then I'll record, okay, this is my last demo.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll do the before and after.
I will say this. The first morning of a trade show, it doesn't matter what trade show it is, everybody, all the manufacturers have been prepping their people. Everybody has a script, you know, for a demo. Everything is very well planned. Everybody's kind of, you know, well pressed and creased and everything else. By the end of the last day, it's just
razzled.
Whatever. Whatever.
No.
You know, caution goes out the window. And that's actually a lot more fun when people can relax. But especially at a trade show like NAMM, where it's so important to keep the dealers happy. You know, the money guys are really nervous.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break right now, but I just want to remind everybody that I will be in the API booth. And come on down, say hey. I'm going to be there Saturday and Sunday. I actually have to mix on Friday, so I'm missing the opening day. I'm flying out Friday night, though. So
lose the company.
But we will we'll take a break now. When we come back, we're going to talk all things Steinberg.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you on the other side.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Steinberg's good, everything else is crap. Good night.
Okay. Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And we're here with Greg Undo from Steinberg, and we're going to dedicate this to all things Steinberg.
Woo-hoo.
Greg can fill us all in on what's happening with Steinberg. And, you know, you can start wherever you want because there's tons of questions I want to ask you. But first, why don't you just give us a little rundown on what's happening over at Steinberg?
Yeah, what's new?
We just released Cubase 4. So and it's going to be kind of aimed at more kind of the music production solution and Nuendo. We're going to see kind of gearing more towards post-production. But a lot of great new features for management of, like, you know, keeping track of all your presets of plugins can be kind of centralized now. So you have what's called, like, a media bay. So you can keep track of any audio file on your system or network drive, any loop. You get audition loops in the project tempo. Any track presets. You can have, like, you know, a guitar track with, like, 5 plugins and just hit one button, save it, and assign your own kind of user attributes and look up by those tags later on. So you can say, oh, I like this clean guitar with wah-wah done in June, and search for a track preset based on your own criteria.
So you can make a preset with all the VSTs and whatever you use.
Yes, everything. So,
and you save it as a preset? You save that track as a preset? And then you can
call it up in any other project at any time.
Wow, that's cool.
So kind of what, you know, a lot, and we're seeing a lot of instruments trying to kind of come up with a solution to a problem of, you know, overwhelming numbers of presets. So instead of trying to do it within each plugin interface where it's going to be a bit different and, you know, this one's stored here and this one and this plugin stores it on this partition of the hard drive or whatever, everything will be kind of accessed from one place regardless of where it's at. We're also seeing kind of the user interface been enhanced a lot, so you can see kind of differentiating between what's active and inactive, like on selected tracks. So it's a little easier to look at for long periods of times. Entirely new plugin set with over 33 new plugins, great compressors, really good guitar amp simulators, reverbs, in addition to all the previous plugins. New instruments as well. We have one that's a Hallion 1, which is really exciting. We're seeing some of the technology from Yamaha because it's actually powered by the Motif ROM.
Oh, really?
So we're having some of the Yamaha sounds incorporated.
Is it a sample playback?
It's kind of a very Homer Simpson-friendly instrument, and you could just like hit one button and
Bobby.
Say...
Bobby. Yeah, Bobby will be able to do
that. So you can just hit one button. I'm looking for acoustic piano that's bright and has reverb, and just search for that any sound that fits into that category. So stuff like that. So a lot of times you're not even opening the plugin interfaces, but so you can quickly work with everything with, you know, just presets and being able to save your own presets will make workflow very fast.
So when you look for – when you save it as a preset, obviously it's saving it as like a database file someplace, right? Mm-hmm. So when you call that preset back up, it's going to put the track in and it's going to line up all the plugins?
Yes.
And plugins from even other manufacturers mm-hmm. that you've used?
Yeah, and even if you have external plugins, like one of the cool things you could do – is have the ability of incorporating the external processing. So if you just have like a great reverb or compressor right. you like, you can just simply send it out to that. And it has automatic delay compensation for that. So you can have a signal chain set up that goes out to your favorite API unit as well as a software plugin.
That, you know what? That was good. That was good. You're talking
that's
about,
why I'm an employee so that's,
like that little API thing. That was good. He's a professional, folks.
So well, that way you could kind of have, you know, because we don't want to be in hardware denial right. as a company. So, right. you know, we have hardware at Steinberg at home and we want to use it, but just kind of in our software environment.
So as long as you keep your studio wired basically the same way with the IOs all, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
routed the same way, you could – that is really cool.
Yeah. And it's very easy now. You know, there's a lot of audio interfaces, you know, with ADAT expansion. So, you know, if your interface has an additional ADAT outs, you can, you know, get an RME converter or, you know, even an inexpensive Behringer and just – use that for – we also have kind of a virtual control room section.
Yeah, I was reading that.
So you can switch between, like, different monitoring sources. So if you have, like, a 5.1 monitor set up or stereo and a mono, you can just switch between different monitor configurations. You could also do stuff like I just want to solo just the front speakers.
Right.
Or let's say I have, like, critical edits going on in the surround speakers. You can hit one button and flip your surround speaker channels to the front. So you can do edits like that. And also setting up headphone mixes, which is one of the things that's always been a bit limiting in a lot of
right.
traditional kind of computer-based studios. You can have up to 4 different headphone mixes. And then you could just say, okay, this kick drum goes more out to the vocalist in the vocal booth and not as much to the drummer in the drum booth. So each track you have 4 independent headphone mixes as well.
Wow. So you're getting to the point really where you're incorporating the control room manager, you know, and – actually making some products out there.
Yeah. And what's great about it, you know, instead of necessarily having to go out and buy a piece of hardware like a central station and a big knob, which have their place for a lot of people,
right?
You know, you can have the same functionality plus the headphone capabilities, you know, all in software.
Wow, that's really cool. What about in Nuendo area? Is there anything coming down the pipe?
We'll probably see – generally we kind of release the new – kind of generation of stuff in Cubase first, and then that gets incorporated into Nuendo plus a lot of other Nuendo features. So I think we may see kind of the next generation of Nuendo coming maybe in the spring of next year. So probably, you know, maybe NAMM we may be talking about a little bit, but it'll be – we'll see a lot more post-production stuff being incorporated as well.
Yeah, one of the things I'm always approached about because a lot of people know I use the Steinberg stuff is what is the difference between – Cubase and Nuendo.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that.
And that yeah. that you might be able to kill a lot of birds with one stone if you just
yeah,
give.
It's a great question. I would, you know, how I would describe it roughly is like I would say Nuendo is going to be more of a facility tool, and Nuendo in Cubase would be more of kind of like a music production tool. And it used to be, I would say, you know, Cubase is like if you're working at home, and Nuendo is if you have a studio. but it's really kind of blurred a bit with the later version of Cubase. Some of the things that Nuendo is going to offer is like pull up and pull down for your video conversion. You know, so a lot of music guys, it's not applicable to. But one of the coolest things is the network collaboration in Nuendo. So if we're all working on a project together, each of us can be networked and basically download a project, and each of us can be assigned by the administrator and say, okay, you know, Rob can work on, you know, the vocal tracks, and you can work, and Bobby can work on, you know, the Foley tracks, and you can work on the music tracks, and we could all be working dynamically at the same time. And as we finish an edit, fly it in over the network into kind of the master session. And that way, four people could be working on kind of their specialties at the same time.
And they're working on the same session,
on the same session, yeah. And you could have it set up so, okay, I want to take a little break. I'm going to upload my changes and then download any other changes that someone else has made, or just have it dynamically go on all the time.
Well, and then can you assign one as like the master session, and everything comes in and out through basically that session?
Yeah. I was in Nashville recently, and it was kind of funny because they had a Nuendo set up in the main studio, and in the house next to the studio, they had a machine that was networked. And what they're doing is actually kind of doing Melodyne and pitching the vocals with the vocalist in the main studio, and she didn't know. So the assistant's in the room to go, you know, fixing all the vocals, networking, flying it in. And singer's like, well, man, I thought I was going to have to recut that. It sounds okay. You know, she was just, you know, oblivious to the whole thing.
She's going, man, I sound great. Yeah, I sound
awesome.
Good.
Yeah. Awesome. How did I harmonize with myself? You know? So the network collaboration is a big thing. We're also seeing some additional, like, file imports, you know, OpenTL, AAF, does higher sample rates, 384K.
What about OMF?
Okay. Yeah, it does OMF, as we do in Cubase 4 as well.
OMF and Cubase 4?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, and still they all do, like, multiple bit depths of, you know, audio. So you have 16-bit files, 24, 32-bit files as well. And we'll see stuff like extended surround support in Nuendo as well. So if you're going to have, you know, 10.2 surround sound. Also with the Yukon network, so you have the Euphonics control surface, which offers very, very deep levels of kind of interfacing between the hardware and software.
Right.
So those are some of the things that set Nuendo apart. But primarily for music production, Cubase would meet the needs of just about everyone. So there's always going to be like a facility that's doing post and working with video a lot, and Nuendo may be a better tool for them.
Is it the same? It's the same audio engine.
Same audio engine. So, you know.
So the files sound the same. Mm-hmm.
And everyone always, you know, raves about the audio engine in Nuendo.
Right.
You know. Whether it's, you know, some of the golden ears in the industry, you know, like I was just at Eric Johnson's place, and they're just like so blown away the first recording they did that he just wanted to go directly into Nuendo and never go into a console ever, and just go straight from the signal path right in and not ever leave. So, so we have a lot of guys that are kind of very picky, you know, whereas the Frank Phil Petties or, you know, the Elliot Shiners, you know, they love that audio engine, and that same engine is in Cubase as well.
Interesting. So let me ask you a question, because I'm a Pro Tools guy, but I hear a lot of good things about Nuendo, and I have no problem with promoting Nuendo, because both Bobby and Rob use Nuendo.
You want to beat him up?
Yeah, we've got him surrounded.
The fact of the matter is I use it mainly because, you know, I do a lot of post production mixing, and still, you know, the default standard platform in post production. But
in this city,
right? In this city. Not in Austin, but in this city.
In Austin, yeah.
That's right.
Tons of it.
But, but I'm sure you guys, how often, you know, you've done audio engine shootouts. I'm sure you've set up Pro Tools system against the Sonar, against the Steinberg, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you, as a company, do you do that a lot just to keep tabs on everybody?
It's always hard to kind of do it and come off as being kind of neutral about it. Frank Phil Petty is always kind of at Right Track. He has a, you know, fantastic room built based, kind of based around a System 5. He has a, you know, 48 tracks in and out in Pro Tools. He has Nuendo as well. And he has everything kind of set up in his room so he could do a shootout, you know. So if you want to go listen to 8 different, you know, word clock distributors and see what they sound like, you know, Frank will do the shootout and invite people over. So, and yeah, he's done the kind of the Pro Tools Nuendo shootout so many times, and he's like, you know, I can do it again, but everyone, you know, every project comes back the same way. So if he actually has a project that comes in Pro Tools, his final pass of what he'll do is take it digitally out of the Pro Tools into his console and then just pass it through Nuendo. And he says it's just instantly night and day better. Wow. And he's just like, and it's like everyone I've ever done it for, no one has, you know, said, oh, use that one. You know, just obviously better.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's like it's the same path, same levels, same signal. It's just going digitally through, you know, and it's just like, I don't know what it is, but that's the sound I want. So that's the sound I'm going
to
use.
Has he ever tried it the other direction?
Yeah.
From the window to and nothing.
Yeah.
See, because my thing is when you do a shootout like that, I mean, in digital, so many different things can affect the sound.
There's a zillion variables.
Yeah. So, but I've heard great things about the Nuendo engine. I've always heard great things. It's from when it first came out, you know. And but there's just, you know, the word clock, the, you know, there's just the DDA, the converters. I mean, there's a lot of things that affect the
sound. Yeah, and Frank's done a pretty good job of keeping it as kind of balanced and neutral and fair as possible. So it'll be the same word clock. It'll be the, you know, everything. He actually did kind of a spoken Sweetwater sound, whereas this, and all the guys are like, well, did you do this and this? It's like, yes, I did this, and I did four other things you didn't think about that could cause a difference, and the same every time, you know.
Well, I know, all I know is there's a lot of people that are jumping ship and going over to Nuendo, you know, and some big names that are moving over.
Well, and you know what, the sound quality is just one of the reasons. I mean, the feature set,
yes. Day and night
is unbelievably great.
Especially if you do anything with MIDI. Especially.
Yeah, I mean, I was cutting guitars all day today, and the guy he uses Logic, but he cuts on. He's got Nuendo. He's got Nuendo 1.5, and he said, you know, I love you Nuendo, but this, you know, whatever. And he's using Logic, and I said, I don't know how you can use Logic. I mean, how can you even work on that thing? And he said, well, show me what do you mean. And I showed him a couple of things.
Oh, it takes about 3 minutes, doesn't it?
And Nuendo's like, really, you can do that? He said, well, you know, there's a lot of misconception about Steinberg, I think, about Steinberg products out there, I have to say, unfortunately.
Well, about the company.
About
also.
The company. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously, as you know, I mean, there's no secret. And it's unfortunate that the bell is rung. You know, it's hard to unring that bell. But but hopefully damage control is coming around and fixing it. But one of the things he said to me is, oh, you know, the trouble is Pro Tools will always sound better because it's got widest panning. I said, what? So he said, no, you they've only got balance knobs in Nuendo. They don't have separate panners. And I was like, no, if you right-click on them. Click. Yeah, then and you have three choices. I said, it's more than thing. You've got 3 dB, 6 dB low, whatever you want. It's like, oh, dude, you can do that. That's it. You know, and so there's unfortunately such a lot of misinformation out there that's unfortunate. And for people working to film and for picture, the MIDI, I mean, it's just like...
Oh, there's nothing like it.
There's nothing
it.
Like
it's
it.
Not,
I mean, I see
close.
People, respectfully, Paul Pagey has Pro Tools, and he's writing songs. He's a great songwriter, and he's producing his stuff in Pro Tools. And I sit there and I go, poor guy. I mean, he could get it done in an eighth of the time, you know.
No, we're talking Pagey here, though.
No, Pagey's... no, but I mean, even so, I mean, just the facility of it, it's absolutely smoking.
Yeah, you don't really see a lot of people kind of move to the window and go back.
Right.
That's the thing.
That's very rare.
I've shown people. I have a bunch of friends who are film composers who use Logic, and
God.
All I have to do is show them. Here's how I do a string section. Here's first violin, second violin, viola, cello, bass. Oh, look! I have them all in one window,
open.
Different colors, open at the same time, and I can see what the first violin's doing as I'm writing for the second violin. You know, game
well,
over.
Well, you can have multiple
folders.
You can see as many different tracks in one editor window as you need, and they can each be.
Can you
color-coded, however you
can
want.
You have more than one session open? Can you have more than – or do you just have one – well, you can work in projects though, right?
You work in
no,
projects,
they don't have
but
arrangements
unlike –
anymore. They used to have arrangements. That's a big sad loss, actually, for Steinberg.
Well, people would get very confused with arrangements because you have 16 arrangements within the song. And then they're like, oh, what's the difference between an arrangement and a song? And people are like, oh, I try to open my arrangement. It's not there. Well, you saved it as a song. You know, so there's a lot of kind of – but we can have multiple projects.
You can have multiple projects open.
And
at least
you can
copy
and drop.
Yeah.
See, now that would be cool because
– that works great.
That's one of the things that I wish – well, the old AudioVision used to have where you can
track
have –
track archive is a very useful
and also,
feature.
Especially if you're an AudioVision guy, you know, like I'm sure you like your bins. You know, you could have independent libraries which are kind of references of audio pools and you could just drag and drop and have multiple bins or pools open. So you could have one pool that's just your sound effects. One pool that's, you know, car doors, whatever, all your posts, and you have multiple pools open and just simply drag and drop. So you have kind of your go-to sound effects. You don't have to, you know, worry about finding them quickly.
I'm going to have to give Nuendo another shot.
Dude, been,
well, the only reason...
I'm telling him.
Yeah, but I tell you, though...
He's been trying to find a crack. That's what it is. It's hard to get a crack. H2O has been...
That's right. But it's especially, you know, especially in L.A., it's, you know, it's such a, you know, to work post... And with the OMF,
no, it's hard.
It's really hard to get
swimming
away because it works.
You know what though?
You have a lot of fairlight systems in LA too, right?
Yeah,
not as many as before, but
yeah, that's true. I mean, they're jumping ship.
Needless to say, I've been pounding the table as you know for a long time about on this podcast about Steinberg and saying how it smokes Pro Tools, and I've been kind of rude towards Pro Tools. So I should be fair and be equally as rude to Steinberg. Okay, let's be fair. You know, I have to pay
equal opportunity.
Equal opportunity. You know, I'm going to say System Link. Mm-hmm. System stink.
Well, System Link is kind of depends a lot.
The new writers are really paying off by it. That was
you know,
gold right there.
Brilliant right there.
Comedy
yeah.
gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what happens with System Link can work very well when the drivers are properly written 100% for the ASIO specification. Okay. If, when they deviate from that, then a
I'm
going to
give you a story
drivers,
after this.
I'd have to say it doesn't work at all for me. I've had horrible problems with that, too.
Yeah, it's not the strongest feature.
Okay.
Oh, nice way to put it.
But I think we'll see some stuff in the future which kind of alleviates that. But a lot of it gets to be the actual quality of the audio driver. I mean, we have a driver specification. Not every company follows it 100%. Army does a pretty good job of following it closer than most companies. But if the company doesn't follow it, you know, 32-bit to 100%, then it can fall apart very quickly.
Right.
Okay, so. I'm naive. What is System Link?
System Link is... Well,
basically allows you to kind of have multiple machines networked together and run sample accurately, hooking up just a digital connection. So you could have one machine, a Mac running Cubase, and one machine, a PC running Nuendo, and through a SPDIF cable, have that, have the two machines sample accurately synchronized. And you could also send MIDI over to virtual instruments on other machines as well.
And that's, you're actually running the program on both machines at the
kind
same
like
time.
Kind of like having like two tape machines synced up.
The problem is it does not work. It absolutely
doesn't work. what I'm thinking is, why do you need it to work, though, when you have the machines of today and...
You can always run out of power for virtual instruments.
Okay, so when a convolution reverb on one machine, you've got like 9 V-stacks on the other bunch. And you want to press play on here, just that.
Yeah, as soon as you say...
So much more.
As soon as you say convolution reverb, that pretty much...
Yeah, Chompo, big
But
time.
Even just with basic VST stuff. Instruments, I mean, I'll sometimes have 5 or 6 PCs going and still be out of power.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Virtual instruments, yeah.
All the time. I mean, that's exactly it. And the real nice thing is the system, you know, I'll tell you a quick sidebar. About 3 years ago, I was a VST, Cubase VST user on a Macintosh. And so I said, you know, I want to get a better system, I want to get a newer system, I want to get the thing. I really like the idea of Nuendo. So Ted Rackley, actually, he said, dude, I'll hook you up. He said, you know, let me see how you work. So I showed him how it worked, and he said, you know, you should be a beta tester because you're really quite a tricky with the thing. You're doing a lot of things. So Art came around from Steinberg. Anyway, long story short, I got on the beta list, and they said, okay, we're going to give you this. And I got going on Nuendo, and I said, well, you know something? I want to get a bunch of VStack machines, because I was pretty much a hardware guy at that stage. So they said, well, yeah, use VStack. It's a great little app, which is the Steinberg product. So I did. I bought VStack. It's like a VSTi host. So I threw down the cash. I'll have, you know, 6 PCs, please. Give us the best of the bunch of the day, P4s, whatever, 2 gigs of RAM. Hooked it all up, dual Opteron PC. I'm changing over. I'm leaving my Mac behind because OS X sucks. And personally, I still think it does in lots of respects. Anyway, but I love it. I mean,
it's
I love
just been
it.
In a state of transition for
yeah,
a long
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And when the dust settles in about a year or so, I'll be saying exactly the same about PCs.
Send those emails to Bobby at...
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know what I think about Microsoft. Anyway, so here I am. So I pull all this stuff together. I went by the book. I bought the RME Hammerfall card. I downloaded the new thing. And to top it all, I said, oh, let me have 4 MIDXs while I'm at it. Dude, I swear I felt like murdering anybody at Steinberg for 9 months. I swear, I was just ranting on.
You listened to Ted Rackley?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I said, okay, let me see what works here. Okay, and as you know, Nuendo 2.0 had a lot of major bugs in it. It was a pain in the butt. The MIDXs didn't work. They freak out when you send certain control information. They just crash and disconnect.
Well, and SysX, for the longest time, I used to drive Greg nuts about SysX. Yeah.
1903 still sucks. I've just used MIDI over LAN, and it's only now fixed the problem. But, I mean, they're not supported anymore, but, you know, they just don't – aftertouch, crash MIDX, one shot. Aftertouch, East-West Library. You know, the
choirs, yeah. The
voice. Hello. Da-da-da.
And it's gone.
Power off. Here we go. Start again.
Anyway. My MIDX is – I have – I think I was the first person ever to put 8 on a single PC.
Yeah.
And actually, I know that because once I put 8 on, we discovered it didn't work, and then Greg helped me get that news back to Germany, and they said, well, yeah, we've actually never tried that. We don't have 8 here in the same room.
Yeah. Warehouse is a different building.
So they had to fix the stuff, and then 8 worked fine. And actually, 8 has been pretty reliable. The only problem I would have is every now and then there'd be a static discharge or something, and 1 or 2 would just stop communicating with the computer. Completely unreproducible. And in this day and age, it's hard to justify having those kinds of problems because there's so many other options. You know, like the MIDI over LAN stuff is finally becoming really good. And so all those hardware interfaces, I mean, MIDI is such an old spec anyway. The idea of spending a bunch of time and money to try to reliably get such an old spec happening seems like a waste. Anyway.
I agree.
You know, speaking of MIDI over LAM, though.
Over LAM?
Did I say LAM?
Did you have Indian last night?
Speaking of MIDI over LAM.
Is that Middle Eastern? Nah. Like hummus? I'll have you on MIDI over LAM, please.
Over LAM.
Do you want 7 bits of it?
No, but is that the implementation that you have now, is that definitely a direct result of the Yamaha acquisition of
Steinberg? Not a Steinberg product. The MIDI over LAN is a separate – it's a different company that does it.
Didn't
– Music what, Lab. By the way, the excellent MIDI over LAN 3.0, now it works.
That's right. What's the one, though?
That should be their slogan.
What was
now
the one
it
that
finally worked.
Yeah, it should be. It did at first. And version 2 sucked big time, too.
But now it actually works.
And we haven't said anything about it.
You're thinking of M-LAN?
M-LAN, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, sounds the same. Yeah,
is that alive and kicking? And
yeah. That's kind of Yamaha's way of communicating over FireWire.
FireWire, there you go.
You know, MIDI audio and control surface information. So you know, what's cool about it, especially you know, if you have like a Motif, which is a very popular keyboard. I think even now, like Guitar Center,
right?
Last month was doing a special where you get the M-LAN card for it, and that can turn into your audio interface.
I got you
as well. So a lot of guys would take that out live with a laptop, and their audio interface was their Motif as a keyboard. So their keyboard sound and the virtual instrument sounds are coming from the same outputs.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Now, let's talk about that, though. You know, Steinberg's gone through some changes from, you know, the Pinnacle to the Yamaha. What, in your opinion, you know, I think Yamaha is actually a better fit for Steinberg than Pinnacle was. I mean, coming from the
– I don't think that's saying much.
Oh, no.
I mean, Kentucky Fried Chicken could have bought Steinberg and it would have made more sense than Pinnacle and Mike.
Well, you know, in some ways you can kind of see what they were doing. I mean, it wasn't that – I remember when it happened. It wasn't that
– because they were going after the video market.
Exactly. So can you fill us in on a little details about that?
Initially, some of the Pinnacle acquisition made sense because there's a lot of parallels. You know, they had strong German development. They had kind of an American parent company, but most of their products are actually developed in Germany. They have kind of consumer products, which are like Pinnacle Studio, and they have very high end products as well, like Liquid. So there's some parallels. Like you say, you have Cubasis, you have Pinnacle Studio, you have Nuendo, which could work with Liquid. But shortly after the acquisition, there's a lot of staff changing, especially in management. And some of the people that kind of pieced together said, oh, if we do this and this, this can make a lot of sense. And those people didn't work there anymore. So, and then you have Pinnacle kind of going through kind of the post end of the Silicon Valley syndrome. And, you know, so it kind of made, you know, more sense. And I think, you know, obviously Yamaha is a company that's dedicated for music. You know, they have the tuning forks in their logo. You know, it's a music company.
Right.
From the customer side, the Pinnacle years or however long it was didn't really make sense. We no longer knew who to contact about what. And
yeah, and it would do, like, great stuff like move our office and not tell anyone. you know, it's like, oh. What, you want it the same phone number? You know, you want a voicemail system? You know, you wanted a directory where people could, you know, talk to, you know, hit a, you know, extension 101 and talk to the person they used to, you know. So there's a lot of kind of really odd stuff like that. So it was kind of a weird transition, but, you know, we kind of had a sense that the kind of the Yamaha thing was looming, so, which has been much better. So, you know, it's nice to, you know, go to dinner and talk about music. You know, and a lot of times Pinnacle also had most of their sales done through kind of sub distributors. So for them, it was weird that we actually talked to our dealers like Guitar Center and stuff like that. It was like, you talk to the customers that you sell to? It's like, yeah, it's called a relationship. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah. So, you know, now with Yam, you know, and they never had any dealings in the market. So, you know, them setting up dealer channels for video industry is much different than the music industry.
Right.
So trying to impose those kind of practices in our industry didn't really work as much. So with Yamaha, they've had, you know, those existing relationships.
Oh, you can tell when you go in the music store now that they're much more comfortable having the stuff come from Yamaha.
Absolutely.
You know, a known entity that they're already selling tons of other stuff.
I'm glad Yamaha got you guys. It's good. And yeah. It was actually a good deal for Pinnacle because they actually made $2 million in a period of a year and a half.
Yeah. And actually, we were the only profitable division within Pinnacle.
Right.
So, and when they did it, they sold it entirely for cash. And then a month later, Pinnacle was acquired by Avid.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, and that's kind of send their stock down quite a bit. And, you know, it was like a couple months ago, it was at the lowest point in 3 years.
Wow.
So
buy now. Well, the one thing that I was worried about, though, was the, you know, Gibson Opco, that whole thing. You know, you just don't want to see.
Yeah, that was the worst example.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of bad acquisition syndromes with software. You know, there's a lot of things changed, obviously, with the Gibson Opcode thing. You know, you had Passport that just disappeared.
Right.
You had Apple and the eMagic Apple thing and they're killing all the PC stuff. So there's kind of almost like a stigma of as soon as a software company is acquired that, you know, everything's going to go bad and, you know, the customers are going to get really, you know, kind of screwed in the process.
Well, in those examples you just said, they really did.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing good about that.
Yeah. Now, you know, and it was great. You know, we had tons of Logic users switch to Cubase when the Apple acquisition happened, you know. It's great for us. But, you know, we never, you know, the customer, you know, and the most important thing was the development team has kind of been stable throughout the whole process.
Yeah,
so they kind of have it, you know, well, it's, you know, it's kind of almost changing banks in a way. You know, it'll be like some features, you know, that were being implemented. It's like, and you have a video guy going, well, how many customers are using that? You know, well, four really important ones that set the trend. Oh, well, do you really need to do that, implement that, you know. So now, you know, it's a music company. So they understand that. They understand the kind of long-term. And we were seeing kind of, you know, great relationship. We initially did, like, the studio connection so you could have your Yamaha console and edit it inside of your Cubase or Nuendo project and have a total recall. We're now seeing, you know, the ability of having the Motif ROM sounds inside of Cubase 4 as well. So there's a lot of – and we've been working with Yamaha as a software company, I think, since, you know, for the very first digital console, the DMP7, we did a software editor. For 1989, you know, we did the CBX D5 with them. We did the DSP factory with them. So we've been working together as a company for a really long time.
I have every single one of those things stacked up in my back room, too.
Yeah, you do.
DMP7.
I remember the DMP7.
I still have three DMP7s. If anyone wants a free DMP7, send an email to, what is it? audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Really?
I have three free DMP7s.
I have a DA7 if you've got a free DA7.
I never even
We're going to do our first
Sonic.
We're going to do
We're
going to do our first giveaway.
Anybody who they've been sitting in my garage, really a little dusty.
The first three people.
We're going to give away a DMP7.
You can have a DMP7 and a letter of apology signed by me. That thing is worthless at this point.
We're going to have to figure out
how sliders were cool though. They were cool.
We'll have to figure out how to do shipping.
Yeah, these aren't so cool anymore.
We'll have to figure out how to do shipping.
Yeah, these aren't probably worth the shipping. I'll just tell you which dumpster I've put them next to and you can come pick them up.
All right, well, we'll figure that out. If you send me an email, we'll give away at least one.
Do you remember how stoked you were when you first got them, the first day you got the
dip? You know what? I bought these things in Hong Kong. I was on tour with Stevie and we found a store called Tom Lee Music that had just gotten them.
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
And it's at the corner of like Hankow and Kaifeng Roads.
Yeah, right in Hong Kong City. Yeah.
I just remember that because telling the cab driver how to get there. But Tom Lee Music got these DMP7s in, and I just went nuts. I was so excited, and I bought three of them, and I ended up dragging them around in my luggage for the whole rest of the tour, which is like two more months. But we got Stevie a bunch of them, and that was like the coolest thing ever.
And then you went to DMP-11s in that big rock.
Yeah, we skipped that. You know what, though? We did some super high-profile commercials like Coca-Cola and McDonald's back then that were truly recorded in DMP-7s. And now, I mean, the average voicemail is better sound quality. But
all right. Well, that's our first giveaway. We're going to give away at least one DMP-7. We'll figure out how
to make it. I should make
it.
You have to take all three.
Come on. We got to make some type.
Vintage.
No.
You know what? If we could turn the podcast into a way for all of us to just unload our own.
Yes. I've got Logic. Logic 6. Dude, it's got that much dust on it.
Okay. Really quick. The DMP-7. Did Stevie sing through them? Did you use them to record Stevie at any moment in time?
You couldn't? I have no idea.
All right.
I probably at one point left it out and he tripped on it. I have no idea, though.
Kicked by Stevie. All right, send us the only console ever kicked.
Okay, send us an email why we should give you this DMP-7.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, an email saying why you would want it.
That's right, why you would want it. To audio@nowcastnetwork.com, and you can get a free DMP-7. Why don't you tell them what that is?
What?
The DMP-7.
Oh, it was the first, I think it was the first digital Yamaha mixer. Digital 12-bit mixer.
Yeah, first digital mixer.
First digital mixer.
12-bit, great.
And it was automatable over MIDI.
Yep.
I mean, the motors are quite tired on this one. They don't snap and respond like they used to.
We make no guarantees.
Oh, no.
It could take up a lot of rack spaces.
And it had SPX-90 in it, didn't it, too?
It had 2.5 SPX-90s. It had like two good effects units and one which was just the scraps of whatever.
The good one was?
Yeah, that was a good one. It had some DSP scraps left that they made a small processor. The third effect was a small processor.
Okay, well, there's going to be definitely some history on this DMP-7. It was definitely
used in a bunch of commercials.
All right, that's awesome. Hot Pockets?
No, Hot Pockets was actually mixed on ProMix 01. Yamaha ProMix 01.
Yamaha, since we have Greg here, I've still got a KX88. Good old KX88. Remember they all cut hard?
Oh, yeah.
One thing I can't work out why, the velocity on the velocity goes from 15 to 127 on it. There's no 0 to 15. Did you know that? I didn't know. I do know that, but I'm saying.
Now you know it.
Now you know. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
I think the key is to mention that to the manufacturer within 15 years of the thing being built.
I'm at 17.
That's right.
I'd like to lodge a complaint. Have they not made another controller?
He's from Steinberg.
Well, they've made a zillion other controllers, but nothing that sleek. That thing was a nice size.
That was a workhorse, too, because I did a couple of tours with those, and they never. Yeah, heavy, but never broke down.
Yeah, I know guys toured years or something.
Never.
They were workhorses. But the MIDI on those, I still have a Yamaha DX1 where the MIDI goes from 0 to 100.
Oh, luxury.
You know?
It's like DX7, you know? Yeah. Stereo's overrated.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're running out of time here, so really quick.
Buy Steinberg products.
Yeah, did you want to talk a little bit about maybe like any of the new VSTIs that are coming out?
We just did one that's really good, and everyone's kind of been doing the Symphony in a Box.
Right.
But we have a Howling Symphonic Orchestra, which is 27 gigs of samples, and does like really clever key switching. So if you wanted to like alternate bowing, you could kind of hit the bottom keys on your 88 key controller, or kind of even almost simulate bowing techniques with a mod wheel.
Oh, that's
cool. Do key switching. So it's very musical, and it actually comes in 24-bit and 16-bit samples as well. So you got, if you want, because most string libraries now I still think are mostly 16-bit for instruments. So
Except for the very most expensive ones.
And it's, 27 gigs for about $500.
Wow.
So, and runs kind of on a Howlian engine, so streaming is very efficient.
I also saw you have a Virtual Guitarist 2 out.
Yeah, Virtual Guitarist is, we have kind of like I like to call them the cheating plugins. Where you kind of have like your virtual session musicians, so you kind of hit two buttons and you sound like you're playing like all sorts of great guitar parts. So the Virtual Guitarist is actually, instead of, because kind of articulating guitar voicings from a traditional keyboard could be a bit difficult. So what you actually do is kind of trigger a real performance of a real guitar player. And it's almost kind of like in a Rex file where it's kind of tempo synced automatically. And you have different articulations for, okay, they hit the chord harder here, to hit it softer, maybe rolled the chord, depending on the mod wheel. So you have like 90 virtual guitars. You hear it on TV all over the place.
Well, do you know one place where you hear the virtual guitarist?
Mm-hmm.
on the theme for the Audio Nowcast.
Clever.
I don't play guitar, so when I wrote that.
Yeah, if you watch, I think it's Mythbusters, it's like all virtual guitars.
Is it really?
Yeah. So it's like named that virtual guitarist.
I love virtual guitars because it's such, especially if you're just, you want to comp a song really quick, it's such a great way to get a guitar in there that doesn't sound, well, in my case, doesn't sound like I'm playing the guitar, you know? Yeah. And it's pretty musical.
Yeah, I remember showing it to Peter Frampton, which is kind of a ballsy thing to do as a studio once. I'm like, hey, check this out. And I played it for him. He's like just sitting there for about 30 seconds. He's like, I don't know if I hate it or love it. So it's kind of like, that like rhythm guitar for me? Okay, I could solo over that.
Well, that's amazing. You know what? A lot of times you combine it with a real guitar.
Yeah.
A lot of times we'll write stuff and I'll use it because I don't play guitar.
Right.
But then bring in the real guitarist, but still keeping those tracks.
Yeah.
It ends up being
great. And we had the same thing for a virtual bassist and one for drums called Groove Agent, which is kind of like your virtual drummer as well. So all kind of, instead of just kind of providing like loops and content, we wanted to kind of be able to musically interact with the content.
No.
So you can kind of, you know, if you have like the virtual guitars, you know, we can load up a couple of those, a virtual bassist, hit two keys, and have a whole band play pretty instantly. So.
It's a great writing tool. I mean, it's like usually if I switch computers or upgrade, that's the first thing I do is I install those, you know.
Yeah, and it's always like, you know, before you tune a guitar, you get to have a guitar part laid out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. Well, hey, thanks for joining us here, Greg. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
And, keep up the good work at Steinberg, too.
Yeah, things are looking really cool.
Definitely.
Yeah, and we look forward to keeping tabs on you whenever you're in L.A., you know, and we're podcasting. You have a seat here, and just know that you are now friends of the Audio Nowcast.
It's great to be here.
All right, guys. Well,
now we're going out for a beer, right?
I'm game. Bobby, thank you for showing up.
Yay!
And Rob, once again,
I'm always here.
Rob, you're the Iron Man. Rob has not missed a podcast yet.
Has he not?
I've slept through some, but I've physically been here.
You actually, it's very true.
That's
you
right.
Solid,
you know.
And
what do I get for that?
He's got, you know why?
Garage full of DMP7s.
That's right. And then we got to thank Andrew for engineering.
Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's about it. So, Greg, I'll see you at AES.
Right.
And until next time, thank you for listening to the Audio Nowcast. Bye-bye.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio.